Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Water from the Indian Express, a series that explores water in all the ways it enters our lives. I'm your host, Ameya Nagarajan. Talked about the monsoon and how it is so important to India, from agriculture and economics to culture and history. We've also talked about the effect of climate change on the monsoon and what this could mean for us, hearing from the India Economic Survey that expects dire consequences and the Indian Express Agriculture and Rural Affairs editor who thinks otherwise. Last week we began to look at rivers, exploring how they have fed and destroyed cities and how deeply they are connected to all life. We also saw how human interference in rivers has broken their ability to cleanse and purify themselves, which means that it is time for us to intervene to fix them.
In terms of the policy per se, the National Water Policy, the latest version is from 2012, is what sets the principles for management of water resources, amongst other things, for the entire country. And interestingly, the document actually recognizes that the natural water resources are under threat. So it could be rivers, it could be water bodies, lakes, etc. And it also recognizes the fact that while these are under threat, they cause a larger negative impact, which is environmental, which could be health impact, cultural, economic, etc. So, I mean, the fact that it's been brought up at the national level policy itself is very heartening.
Hi, Ameya. I'm Radhanka Saxena. I'm an architect and urban designer, but work more in the realm of planning, policy, and design. And I've worked a lot with water, with the Delhi Jal Board, and now currently as a research fellow with the Yamuna River Project, an initiative of the University of Virginia.
I met Mriganka through the Yamuna River Project, a multidisciplinary research project from the University of Virginia that is trying to understand the state of the Yamuna in Delhi and explore ways to help the river recover. I asked her about India's water crisis. The crisis is something that the Niti Aayog has been talking about when it published a report that said that 40% of Indians would no longer have access to drinking water by 2030, and then 21 cities would run out of groundwater by 2020. Just to give you a little perspective, that is 2 years away.
Depleting water resources are a crisis that we've been sort of working our way towards systematically, unfortunately. I wouldn't know facts and figures for all cities, primarily been working in Delhi. But it is a management crisis more than a crisis of a depleting resource. We need to manage our water resources well today to be able to take care of the future. And I mean, that's something that you would hear everywhere, essentially. I mean, if you were to look at all the rain that we get in different cities, if you just compare the numbers, we would get water demand is through rainwater, just that the rain comes after the summer and you can't store all of it. But with newer technologies, with the way one can recycle, etc., on paper, it it is doable. On paper, you can work with recycled water, you can work by minimizing wastage in our supply systems, etc. But when it comes to actually implementing it, it becomes a very, very big challenge in larger cities, in any kind of an urban agglomeration, actually. So unless we do multiple things together, it's not going to get sorted.
Given that we are in this situation, I wanted to know what solutions could be.
There are multiple things. I mean, generally, water, you would be looking at the portable supply, which is what you require, fresh water sources for your portable supply. There is sewage that comes out of the portable supply. Approximately 80% of the water that you consume comes out as wastewater. That's the basic standard. And then, of course, that there is our natural water resources that are sort of an asset for any city, be it at whatever scale. Generally, the two, the natural water resources and the piped systems of potable water and sewerage, are seen independently. One needs to start looking at water as a complete cycle, where one can actually look at a smaller scale, where we're looking at decentralized systems, looking at managing water at smaller than a basin level as well. So, you know, how can you manage, how can you recharge your groundwater using existing water resources? How do you manage your portable supply? Would you actually ensure that 80% of the water gets recycled and then goes back into that system? So all our car washing, our flushing, our irrigation, parks, gardens, etc. can actually be done with recycled water. The problem that comes is the infrastructure. Laying down the pipework for recycled water is expensive. Also, more than expense, it's a very large task in a city that is already, you know, that exists. That means you're redoing the pipework. The other problem that comes to recycled water is that you need double piping at the building level, which is where institutions or agencies like the DGB have no control. You cannot enforce private sector to change all their piping. And so even if there is recycled water, it is not getting used for these reasons. Also, the other initiative that's coming up is actually using the recycled water, treating it further from primary, secondary, tertiary sort of processes, and actually releasing them into existing water bodies to enable recharge. So you're actually making sure that the entire hydrology of a system actually gets restored. So recycled water is cleaned further, discharged into an existing water body, which then seeps through and goes into the ground at the appropriate sort of quality levels. And you're also restoring water bodies in the meanwhile. So, I mean, it's this lateral thinking that one needs to do. And Delhi is actually doing a few projects such as these.
Okay, there are solutions, but how complicated is it to implement them? How does one legislate or enforce water policy? What Brigaka told me was mind-boggling. Government happens at three levels, central, state and local, and different parts are tied to different things. So many agencies are only tangentially responsible for water bodies and have no real mandate to do anything about them. And nobody has any sort of single holistic control over water at any level except the central. One of the researchers of the Yamuna River Project told me that there are 26 different agencies that are directly or indirectly involved with the Yamuna. That's insane. And there's nobody to sort of oversee them and tie their policy together.
Being a country like ours and the rate of urbanization that we're going through, we're literally just at the cusp of urbanization right now. Another 30 years, and that's when we're really hitting the peak of urbanization in the country. If we are not optimistic right now, there's no way we're going to cross these 30 years. But having said that, just optimism is not going to work. We actually need to get started. And there is a lot of work that's happening. I mean, there are structures in place, but one needs to just go all out and make water bodies and natural water resources a priority and actually work actively across all scales.
So it looks like there is hope for us after all. It's just that we need to get going well pretty much yesterday. I asked Brigaka what it was going to take to reverse this crisis. Could we even get the buy-in that we need?
It isn't easy. I mean, as a straight answer, it isn't easy to get buy-in. Also because within an urban agglomeration, the competing demands are so much because all infrastructure is failing. I mean, it's not only water, right? It's You have transport, you have other essential infrastructure, which is always a problem. We're always coping with our urbanity in many ways in the country. So making sure that only one thing gets done is definitely, I mean, making it up in the priority itself is a big thing. Also, when there is a crisis, that's when people start talking about it. So in the summer, when there is water shortage, that's when, you know, there would be a lot in the media about water. However, like all other planning aspects that and all other planning projects and infrastructure projects, timelines have to be for a minimum of 20, 30 years. That's how cities grow. That's how cities get built. There aren't really any quick wins. While I absolutely agree with the idea of getting a precedent on the ground, actually saying that once you show people, you know, people's mindsets actually change once you've seen something on the ground. But we can only do, you know, one or two pilots. We cannot be going from pilot to pilot. We need to be able to give it time. We need to be able to give agencies the time, the luxury of time and the money that it requires to systematically restore water bodies in our cities and across states. Unless that is done and unless one is allowed to do that, it becomes a problem. Therefore, I think having a single unitary water body authority at the city and state level is essential because that becomes their mandate. Unless water resources is the primary mandate of any one agency, it's not going to get done. Your budgetary allocations, your the kind of people that you enroll in your agency, all of that then is governed by the mandate that an agency has. An agency which is responsible for, you know, building roads and building essential transport infrastructure, even if they own water bodies because it's part of their land, will not be looking at water bodies because rightly so, it's not what they're meant to do. And that is how water bodies exist in our city. It's based on land ownership. You know, oh, your five water bodies fall under mine. Okay, it's my mandate, but it's not because they're not skilled enough to do it. It's not a priority. They don't have budgetary allocations to do it.
To recap, the central government has taken cognizance of the water crisis and its wider ecological causes and impact, and is even trying to make policy. But since we have no single agency at any level other than the central that has a unified mandate around water, implementation is really hard. Still, if we can take steps to fix this, we can probably save ourselves from this water crisis in several ways. Next week, we'll return to the cultural and historical importance of water, looking at the history of the Yamuna and trying to understand why this river has some of the problems that it does. This is Water from the Indian Express.